ZS6 SRC 37 has made extremely good progress this past week. Last week we reported that it had just crossed into Western Australia. On Friday evening it was reported over southern Namibia, and on Saturday morning it was over the east coast of southern Madagascar. By the time of writing this program, it was already well on its way over the southern Indian Ocean, en route to Australia, for the second trip around the southern hemisphere. The path that it is taking is further to the south than previously. There is now a second picker balloon in the air. The Mauritian Amateur Radio Club's ZS6 SRC-84 was launched on Friday. The balloon is transmitting a 20-meter beacon on channel 465. At the time of writing this program, the balloon was approximately midway between Mauritius and Australia, in the southern Indian Ocean. It is maintaining a good altitude and a steady speed of around 50 kilometers an hour. Last week we started talking about troposducting, what it is, and we started talking about the forecasting of troposducting and the data that is needed in order to predict or forecast when possible ducts could take place. I also mentioned websites where tropo forecasting can be viewed, and that forecasting of troposducting is not a simple task and requires a good understanding of the upper atmosphere. This week I want to expand on that. As we heard last week, troposducting has advantages and disadvantages depending on what you are doing. This week I want to take a look at the upper air data and try to understand a little bit about the relationship between temperature, pressure and humidity, and the actual conditions experienced. As mentioned previously, upper air data is collected by weather balloons that are sent up twice daily. There are other methods used, such as sounding rockets and radio sondes that are dropped from aircraft, but balloons are by far the most common method used. Locally, these balloons are launched by the South African Weather Service from various weather stations around the country. There is a map in the text version of this program on the AMSAT SA webpage, showing the worldwide distribution of stations that record upper air data. Interesting to note that the number of stations in Africa peaked in the 90s, but by 2015 has decreased considerably. So what is the relationship between temperature, pressure and humidity? Of the three atmospheric variables that influence refraction, water vapor has the greatest effect. The more moisture there is, the more refraction there will be. Temperature, on the other hand, needs to be low. In other words, the higher the temperature, the less refraction. Moisture and temperature are the two factors that affect refraction the greatest. Pressure variations have a small influence on refraction. Normal refraction occurs under normal or standard atmospheric conditions, in which moisture, temperature and pressure all decrease with altitude. Normal refractive conditions are found in areas with very weak or no inversions, deep moisture, moderate to strong winds and very unstable, well-mixed conditions. There are often showers in the area and distinct cloud elements, cumulus or cumulonimbus, open convective cells, wave clouds, streaks or convective cloud lines. Synoptic influences include a cyclonic influence, post-frontal or unstable prevailing conditions. Subrefraction occurs when the temperature and moisture distribution creates increased refractivity with height. The wave path bends upwards and the energy travels away from the surface. In hot, dry areas with temperatures greater than 30 degrees Celsius and relative humidity less than 40%, solar heating produces a homogeneous surface layer, sometimes hundreds of feet thick. Subrefractive areas are also formed by warm, moist air moving over a cooler, drier surface, and near warm fronts because of warmer temperatures and an influx of moisture. Ducting is an extension of superrefraction because the meteorological conditions for both are the same. The conditions that form a trapping layer are more intense than those that form a superrefractive layer. With knowledge of the overall synoptic weather pattern, it is possible to make a rough determination of the refractive conditions associated with the high and low pressure areas and associated frontal regions as shown in the synoptic chart and sea surface temperature table. Sounds very complicated to me. What is interesting is that sea temperatures are mentioned. May this be the reason we only get forecasts for ducting over the oceans? How is the refractive index for moist or humid air calculated? What about inland? Again, more questions than answers. Well, I have been following another thought process. We know that we need to look for temperature inversion, relative humidity and pressure. On the morning of 7 August 2019, the long-distance VHF group reported good conditions between Bloemfontein, Bethlehem and Gauteng. So I went and looked for the SKU-T charts for stations that reported upper air data for the morning of 7 August. I could only find data from Irene and Upington. You will see that the chart for Irene shows a very sharp and narrow temperature inversion at the height of 4,331 meters and the pressure level of 609 hectopascal. And then another temperature inversion around pressure level 450 hectopascal. The relative humidity is not shown on the SKU-T chart. But if one examines the data that was recorded, you will see that the relative humidity at 609 hectopascal was only 2%, while between 450 and 500 hectopascal, the relative humidity was higher at 12%. Now, Upington is way out to the west, but we know that our weather patterns move from west to east, and the atmosphere is dynamic and continually changing. So let us see what Upington's data shows. Here we will also see that where we have temperature inversion, the relative humidity tends to be higher. Could this be an indicator of a troper duct over divisions 4 and 6, albeit weak compared to that experienced over the oceans? Interesting, isn't it? I have no doubt in my mind that this needs further study and data needs to be captured every time we experience long-distance communications, so that we can work out what is happening in the upper atmosphere and the relevance of it to our long-distance weak signal communications on VHF and above. Well, that is all for this week. All the links mentioned here are in the text version of the program, which is on the www.amsatsa.org.za website. How about telling us about that exciting long-distance contact that you have made on the VHF and above bands? Or about that project that you are working on in the VHF and above bands? Send me a consolidated report of your activity or project with any additional photos, audio or video clips to bjacobza@gmail.com. Remember, by sharing your activities with us, allows us to tell the rest of the amateur community about your achievements, and the more we promote the activity on the VHF and above bands, the better chance we have of encouraging more amateurs to explore the world above 30 MHz. This program is compiled, edited and presented for Amateur Radio Today by Brian Jacobs, ZS6 Yankee Zulu.